Welcome to the Ultimate Journey of Self-Care. I am Allison Kaczkowski, your host. Thank you so much for tuning in to check out exactly what we're talking about. Self-care means so many things to people. It's one of the reasons I decided to start this show. And you'll hear self-care discussed from a number of different angles in this space. I am grateful to have you with me, and I hope you get a lot out of what I'm going to share with you today.
Hey, everybody, it's Allison Kaczkowski. Thanks for joining me again today for another edition of the Ultimate Journey of Self-Care podcast. This is our Tuesday flagship show that we are super proud of. I am Allison Katz, your host, and I'm always excited to be with you on this Tuesday morning. So today I'm talking to Michelle Neumeyer. She's coming to us from Miami, Florida. And we're going to be talking about a subject that a lot of people, I think, are talking about today, and that is recovering from burnout. I think burnout is, for a while there, it seemed like everybody was talking about it. There weren't a lot of people talking about real actionable solutions and easy things that you can do every day if you find yourself in this position. And so Michelle's going to share a little bit about her story, but we're going to talk about a thing that she has really kind of coined as her own called the concept of bending time, which I'm always curious to hear what other people say about their relationship with time. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Yeah. So you and I were chatting before we hit record a little bit about your story. You are a trained attorney, even though you don't do that anymore. And you actually help other professionals, you know, who struggle with burnout because you found yourself there at one point. Tell us just a little bit about your story.
Okay. So I actually was a litigation attorney for 33 years, and I worked in different kinds of businesses. I started out in a law firm that handled national cases, and I traveled about 3 weeks out of every month. Then I moved to Miami, and I was in a more local commercial litigation practice for a while. And then I went to a boutique law firm that was only insurance coverage for policyholders. And then I started my own business doing that in 2003. So I had about 20 years of my own practice where I had staff part of the time, but it was all on me. And I just, about 2013, so about 10 years into that solo practice, I became extremely burned out. I didn't know it at the time.
Yeah, I don't think
I really didn't. I liken being burned out to being like a lobster in a pot that's getting cooked.
Yeah.
So the water's getting warmer. You just don't know it. You start feeling disengaged. You start to question your life choices. I literally questioned all of my life choices, not just to be a lawyer, but all kinds of choices. I had become divorced during this time. I blamed my job for that. I blamed what I had given in my legal career for a lot of the things that weren't what I liked, or I wasn't where I wanted to be. And I was very, very judgmental about that, right? Where I thought I should be versus where I was. And I was giving a lot of myself to my cases. I had for years. So I hit a point where I was just really numb. I would call it dead inside.
Not to interrupt you, but honestly, I feel like a lot of people, if you're listening and you've experienced this before, I think you have a lot of those moments where I think you just you sort of think about it for a minute, and then you just say, "I'm going to keep going, and I'll think about that later." And I think our go-to becomes, "I'm going to action my way out of this," because you know maybe it's always worked, maybe it's kind of a go-to. I can speak for myself and know for several years I did the same thing.
Oh, for sure. And I think part of it is when you're an achiever.
Yeah.
That's what you do. You do, right? You don't be, you do.
Right.
And so you are very focused on accomplishment, achievement, et cetera. And if you start feeling like you're not succeeding, quote unquote, or you're not happy, your solution to it is to do more, not to do less.
Yes, absolutely. Could not have said it better. Yeah.
And so, yes, that's our touchstone that we come back to often is mine was, for instance, I was telling you, I always went to fitness as my, here's how I get out of this hole. This is how I start to feel more like myself. But in doing that, often I overdid it.
Yeah.
And so I was a runner. But I was a runner who didn't cross train, and I would hurt myself running. I would always end up, I'd run until I hurt myself, and then I wasn't working out anymore at all.
But
and
really,
then I'd start again.
About, I think, is what a lot of people who are go-getters, right? Mm-hmm. Who are motivated by achievement. Or maybe it's I know for me, I was brought up in a household where both of my parents are self-made. And even though they're both retired now, you know, all the story that my siblings and I heard growing up was, if you don't work hard, you're not going to make anything of yourself.
Right.
You can't just wait around and let things happen. And so I think the mentality becomes, I'm just going to keep working and keep pushing. And if I don't do that, then I won't get to where I want to be. And I'm not saying anything is wrong with that. I think you do have to have a certain amount of that to be successful. But I think to your point, the most important thing that you can do is learn balance with that. And so fitness, to your point, can be an outlet, but it can also contribute to the problem too, which is what you're talking about.
Right. So it was, you know, my solution was also my downfall in a sense. It was just, it just added to it, you know? And so one of the things that's the really the cornerstone of what I teach people now, and it's something I had to learn, I was forced to slow down.
Yeah.
I had no choice.
Yeah. The choice was
made. The choice was made for me. So what happened was about 20 years into my law practice, I laid down on my back one night to go to sleep and I had this horrible pain and it wouldn't go away. And it was the weirdest thing because if I stood up, I felt fine. If I laid down on my back, I had this pain and then I'd stand up and I'd feel fine. And so for about 2 hours one night, this went on and I finally went to sleep. And the second night it happened again. And that night I pull out my phone, I got on Dr. Google, right? And I start researching symptoms. And it tells me that I could have appendicitis. And all I could think is, I'm going to be that person. I have a very high threshold for pain. And I was thinking, I'm going to be that person who dies of sepsis because I was too tough to go to the hospital, right?
Right.
And so at 3 a.m, I got in my car and I went to the hospital.
Uh-huh.
And they diagnosed me, sort of. They did blood testing and they did an ultrasound. And ultimately, they thought I had gallstones. I went on a hardcore, gallstones are a lifestyle thing. I can diet and exercise my way out of that.
Right. Actually, your way out of it, right?
And so I did that for about a year. And at the end of that year, I had a UTI and I went to my family doctor and he called me in and he said, can you come in to talk to me about your blood test results? And I'm like, oh my God, right? That's really scary.
Never a good call, never a good sign, right?
Yeah. And I go to talk to him and he explains to me that the reason they thought I had gallstones was this pattern of 3 different elevated liver enzymes. And that those enzymes were now at least double as high as they were a year before.
Yeah.
Even though I had no pain, even though I had lost 35 pounds, I was literally at my high school weight. I felt more fit than I ever had in my life. And I hadn't had pain again ever since that hospital visit. And so I went to a specialist and I found out that I have this rare autoimmune disease called PBC. And I get online and I start seeing, getting online is the worst thing you can do.
I know. It's like WebMD, you know, everybody's trying to be their own doctor, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I even in my legal career, I've done like legit medical research. Yeah. And so I go to NIH website and that kind of thing, but I'm still seeing some of the old research. I'm seeing things that are saying that people with this disease can die within 10 years, that they may need a liver transplant to survive. And I'm like, whoa, right? And there is a drug that treats it. And I tried to treat it with nutrition for 6 months, actually.
Yeah.
And it didn't work. I kept a chart and I could see my enzymes going like this. Like literally you could put a ruler on the scale and see that it was following the ruler. Yeah. It was crazy. So I ultimately started taking the drug and I went to a health coaching school to learn about functional medicine and lifestyle changes and all kinds of things that you could do to help with an autoimmune condition beyond what the medical world tells you. And I implemented a lot of that. And ultimately, over a long time, it took probably 5-6 years for this to happen, I reversed the damage from the disease. I was stage 2 when I started. I'm stage 0 now. And I was able to, you know, get my liver enzymes are now back in the normal range and everything seems good. And I also realized that I was enjoying my job again.
Yeah.
And I felt engaged again. And yeah. I didn't feel burned out anymore. And that was when I realized I had something I wanted to share.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
So evidently, obviously, your story has kind of moved you to where you are now. So now what you do in your work is you help overscheduled, overworked professionals
yes.
that are really close to in the same place as you were. And
yes.
you do it through what you talk about, this concept of bending time. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. And those people, I will refer to them as the lobsters in the pot who don't yep. know they're there yet, right?
Yep.
And the reason that the program is about time is I realized that when I was the lobster in the pot and I didn't realize I had a problem that was leading to burnout, leading to autoimmune disease, I thought I had a time management problem. I started having trouble focusing, so I wasn't getting the work done. I'd go to work and I'd be there for 8 hours and I'd stare at the same paragraph and I'd read it 10 times and I wouldn't finish the project I was working
wasn't
on.
Wasn't registering. Yeah.
Yeah. And I used to be highly effective, right? So I was like, yeah. What is wrong with me? I actually considered going and getting tested for adult ADHD. I thought maybe that was what was wrong. And ultimately, I realized all of it really had to do with this unhealthy lifestyle I was living. And leading to actual burnout and then an autoimmune disease.
Yeah.
But it started at a time when, you know, the first symptom to me was what I felt was a failure to be able to take care of managing time.
Well, and what I find really interesting about what you're saying is that, you know, you talk about like reading something and reading it, getting through it 10 times, and you still don't really know what you're reading because it's not registering, right?
Yeah.
And then on the back end of that are these symptoms, if you will, and conditions that are showing up in your body, which is evidence
yes.
of like what you've been through. But really what's coming up for me as you're talking is it's an imbalance in how your body's really managing energy.
Absolutely. Right? And also chronic inflammation, which is yes. related to chronic stress.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, you're not moving your body enough. You're not yep. eating the right foods. I learned that I probably my entire life have had a really bad gluten insensitivity. You know, I ultimately did an elimination diet as part of what I was doing holistically, and I react horribly to gluten. I had
most people, I don't mean to interrupt you, but most people are gluten insensitive. It's just that some people are extremely sensitive, right?
Yeah, like I hit a point where now, because I don't eat it at all anymore,
yeah.
if
yeah.
I get it by accident,
you know,
and
it.
it's there's different categories for me. There's the sort of bread and pasta because it's got flour in it type of gluten. And then there's the supercharged like chemical gluten that they add as an additive to yeah. all kinds of things.
Yeah, the GMO. Yeah.
Not GMO. It's like it's literally they take wheat and they take some aspect of wheat and they make it into a chemical stabilizer that gets used in things like soy sauce and salad dressings and all these things you never would imagine, the marinade
yeah.
for your steak at a restaurant.
Yeah.
And when I eat those things now, I literally, my mouth tingles and I get bumps on the roof of my mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet.
And
your body is become so incredibly efficient. And
yes.
sensitive at being able to pick all that out. And that's always giving you feedback. So I love that.
Sure. But the thing that I wasn't aware of that, you know, I just didn't know it was a symptom of anything. When I was in my 30s, I was achy a lot. I had joint pain in my fingers.
Yeah.
I was 30 something. I wasn't yeah. 80. I was 30 something. And I had joint pain in my fingers and I had my knees were always hurting and I had swollen ankles all the time. And I had, you know, all these classic signs of chronic inflammation, but nobody ever, you know, I'd see the doctor and nobody would say, hey, there's something wrong with you. Are
yeah.
you considering, maybe you should eat, maybe, well, here's one. Maybe you should drink water instead of coffee and Diet Coke all day.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
Maybe you should take that giant bottle of Advil out of your house.
Yeah.
And instead replace it with a better lifestyle and a better diet.
Yeah. Well, we're always, I think, because of there's really two things that are coming up for me with this line of conversation is that
You know, when we live here in the U.S., and don't get me wrong, I love living in America. I really do. I love traveling, but I love being at home too. And I feel like we are conditioned because of the way that we live that we have to be going all the time, whether that's doing something that we really love or not, right? So, yes, and a lot of that lends itself to, you know, us reaching for these short-term solutions to help us, you know, cure that being tired or starting to feel run down or that extra cup of coffee, or let me take the Advil because my head is hurting a little bit and I'm just going to take the edge off, or that energy drink in the afternoon to help me finish what I'm doing. I do think that there is a part of our society that's conditioned to just do that and not question it.
So I'm thrilled to announce that I'm partnering with a brand new product, and it's called Cellevate. This is an amazing, tasty, gummy supplement, and it comes in two varieties. One designed to help you with inflammation and recovery, perfect for after a workout, or if you've had like several days in a row where you've really pushed it and you're really starting to feel it in your body, this is the perfect addition to a regular routine. The other formula helps address focus and memory, which, let's be honest, I think we can all use a little help there, right? What's different about Cellevate is that not only does it taste great, but it has amazing antioxidant power. So many vitamins and supplements on the market today, you either have to take several in a single day to even see any kind of tangible result, or most of the time, a lot of them don't even give you the result that they promise. And Cellevate checks both boxes. I take one of each formula every day. And what's more is that they pack and travel really well. So you can take some and put them in a Ziploc bag and throw it in your bag when you're going out of town, and they won't melt. And it just is the perfect addition to whatever it is that you're doing every day in the way of vitamins and supplements and whatever else works for you. So I knew that I had to get in here and at least tell you about it. I would love it if you would head over to their site and give it a try. I'm actually going to offer you a really special deal. You can find this amazing product at their website, and that's spelled Cellevate.com, which is Cellevate.com. And use my special promo code, the Allison K 2024, and you can save 15% off. I would love to know what you think once you have a chance to try this.
Yes, and we also have a systemic lack of movement for most people, depending on where you live.
Well, I can tell you, as a career health and fitness professional, 52% of the population now in 2025 don't get enough activity.
Oh, for sure.
50% of the population are overweight or overfat as a result.
Yeah. And a big part of that is regular activity that if you were 100 years ago, if you were in a city in Europe, you'd get that activity.
Totally.
I have, you know, one thing that I do as a natural thing in my life is I have moved to a downtown community where I walk to the Whole Foods and carry my groceries home.
Good for you.
I go for, you know, at least every day, I at least go for one long walk. But I also just, my regular lifestyle forces me to walk blocks to here, five blocks to there. I take public transportation a lot. I have a car, but frankly, a couple of years ago, I made a trip to North Carolina and I brought my car to the mechanic and had him look at it before I left. And he made me replace my tires because they'd sat for too long and they developed ridges in the rubber and needed to be replaced.
Isn't that interesting?
Because my car didn't get driven enough. This man had to tell me, you really have to take your car out and drive it every week. Yeah. I'm like, okay.
I love this about just, you know, what you've sort of decided to do, and it's part of the way that you live now every day, and this shows up in what you teach in your work, is that it's about taking advantage of the opportunities that you have during the day. Like you mentioned, walking to the Whole Foods and carrying your groceries. I mean, you know, parking your car when you do have to drive a little bit further away and getting those extra steps. But although it sounds like you walk quite a bit during the day.
Right. Anyway. And, you know, but you think about it, the typical person living a typical American suburban lifestyle. I'll use the example of when I was growing up and when I was in high school, my parents moved to a town called Carmel, Indiana. It's outside Indianapolis. They lived in a subdivision in Carmel. We had the grocery store was literally, you know, there were like big county blocks, and inside the county blocks, there were subdivision streets. And at the end of the county block I lived on, it wasn't more than a half mile from my house was a grocery store. I don't think in the entire time I lived there, and, you know, I technically lived at that house for 2 years, a year and a half of high school, and then my parents lived there while I was in college and went home for summers and stuff.
Right.
I don't think I ever walked through that grocery store once.
Uh-huh. Isn't that interesting?
Not once.
Yeah.
Because you didn't walk anywhere. You got in your car and you drove.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we're still seeing a lot of that today because—
Oh, for sure.
Because we're conditioned to believe that— Well, it's not that we're conditioned to believe. We actually see the evidence of it, too, that it's actually faster to drive and get there. It's one of the arguments, and this is what's coming up for me now, and then we'll move on, is one of the big arguments, or I don't want to call it argument, maybe it's a discussion right now, and where I live is, what can we do to make public transportation more appealing to people? And yeah. What I always think of, and about every election cycle, this comes up because somebody wants to talk about light rail or let's make public transportation better. Why aren't more people using it? But here's the thing about it. In order for that to really work and for you to sell that to a society, and this is where Europe has us beat by light years, you have to convince people that it's more convenient, that it's cheaper, and that it's better to do that. And how do you do that? You have to show people that it's going to be faster, it's going to be easier, and it's going to be better than if they take their own car. Which leads me to my next question for you, which is, this is a lot of what you teach with the concept of bending time for people.
Yes. So public transportation, classic example of that. When I lived in my first law job was in Washington, D.C. I lived outside D.C. in the suburbs. Mm-hmm. I took the train into the city. It was about a half hour from where I lived to the, you know, to get into where my office was. And, you know, I had a nice, kind of a nice long train ride, and then I'd have to change trains. So in that nice long train ride where I had about a half hour, I would do billable work on the train. I couldn't do that driving my car.
Yeah.
That was a benefit to me. Now, yep. Was it always more convenient? No, because I actually, I lived in an apartment complex that was about a mile and a half trek down the road from where the train station was. And if you worked late at night, which every young lawyer in a law firm in D.C. does, our little shuttle bus stopped running at 7 p.m. And when I'd walk home, there was a biker bar. It was creepy. There was no sidewalk. Like, I finally got out of that lease because the travel from the train to the apartment was a little bit sketchy.
Yeah,
and I finally started driving to work because of that, not because it wasn't better to take the train. But, you know, and I ended up moving into the district where I walked to work instead.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was, you know, that commute where I could use that time to do profitable work was actually an example of bending time. It was a way to take that time that you could be sitting in your car getting pissed off and frustrated by the traffic.
But you're actually putting it to good use.
And instead, you're relaxed. You're doing some work. You're coming into the office with something already done.
Yeah.
You're shortening your workday because as a lawyer, you're expected to do a certain number of billable hours. And one of my billable hours happened on the train rides there and back.
Yeah, because you're setting it. But really what you're saying is you're setting yourself up for success, which is really what you're helping a lot of your clients do now with helping them find these tiny wins throughout their day.
Exactly. And part of that is that mindset piece. You come in calm and ready to go instead of coming in like, oh my God, the traffic today, it was so terrible. And like commiserating with the people at work about how terrible the traffic was. And the next thing you know, it's 10:30 and you haven't done anything. So there's that too, right? The mindset aspect of being in that right frame of mind to be productive versus being in that rumination about the terrible way your day started.
Well, and I think it's just human nature to focus on what's not going right. You know, we tend to, you know, it's like what I always say, you can have a day where a lot goes right. And then there might be one meeting that doesn't, or there's the one client that just is the royal pain and requires like a lot more from you, or, you know, something, you know, a sale doesn't come through that you, or whatever it is. And think about more the one thing that went wrong. Because that's what we
want. And that's a very difficult thing. It is something that you can train yourself on.
Oh, 100%.
And this is something that for me, it was the big, big change for me was that, and I hate to say this, it'll go out on the internet and my mom might hear this, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Okay.
I was raised in a household where there was a very negative attitude. if I brought up an idea, what came back to me was why I couldn't do it or why it would never succeed or why it was risky, not, oh my God, that sounds so cool. How can you make it
happen? Yeah.
And, you know, if something went wrong, there was always somebody else's fault. First of all, it was always somebody else's fault. And it was a bad, bad thing. Oh, I'm so sorry. This terrible thing has happened.
Yeah.
Instead of going, what's the silver lining? What can we gain from this?
What's the lesson? What do we know now that we didn't know then?
Exactly.
Like, right.
And probably one of the most important lessons I've learned in the last 10 years or so has been I have very, very actively practiced positive mindset.
Yeah.
And always stepping back and taking that moment to reflect in those things and saying, where's the benefit in this?
Mm-hmm.
What is the thing that how can I pivot with this to make it work versus, oh my God, the world's going to end. This thing didn't happen.
Well, it's really all about perspective. But to your point, we have to train ourselves to do that. And I think what's where we have to learn to be onto ourselves when we find our mind going in the rabbit hole. And I'm not saying it's, I just don't think about it. Well, that's just not realistic. And that's just not life. You're going to have days where you can't help but think about what's not going on.
Oh, of course. But when you
recognize that so that we can get ourselves out of it, right?
Yes. And once you do, you can like think about a bigger picture around it.
Yeah.
And think, okay, here's this one little deal that fell through. But what was the opportunity cost of that deal? And what do I have out in this bigger world of possibility that actually could be better than that?
Yeah.
And if I took that deal, maybe I'd be prevented from doing this other thing.
Yeah.
Which happens all the time.
It's kind of like that whole saying, sometimes when things don't work out, it's a blessing in disguise. If we're willing to believe that there's something else coming, right?
Yes. And we have a lot more power as proactive beings.
Totally. 100%.
To choose to make those things happen.
Yeah.
As opposed to keeping ourselves small, feeling like, oh, that didn't work. Well, then I must be a failure or I can't do this thing.
Yeah. Love that. So what's your best piece of advice before we wrap up? I always like to ask my guests this. What's your best piece of advice for people listening who maybe feel like they're on the edge, but maybe they're hearing what we're talking about and they're saying, well, you know, I don't know if that could really work for me. What do you say? What I'm looking for is a couple little tips, like something that people could go on and help them get a win today.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So to me, the most important thing for anybody at all, at any stage in their life is, you know, think back to the time when, you know, when we were children, most of us could be really excited about things, like a kind of excitement as an adult. It's hard to feel that again, right? The night before Christmas, the morning you wake up and you're like, oh my God, my present that I've been asking for months is under the tree. And I see that it's that because it looks like a bicycle under that giant piece of wrapping paper you know, whatever, that you're really excited about. Maybe you overcame a challenge, you beat the record at your team sport, you won the championship, you learned how to jump rope for the first time, whatever it is, right? And sometimes it's really little things. You learned how to tie your shoes, you know, things that gave you a sense of accomplishment or a sense of pride or a sense of achievement or something that you were just super excited about, either like looking forward to it or, you know, the sense of accomplishment of having built something, made something, and you see the finished product. And really dig into what are those feelings that you have. And what were the things around it that made you feel those feelings? Now, people have different things that light them up. It might be a sense of community that you got as you were part of the crowd that was cheering and everybody was doing the wave or whatever. Some people are really lit up by that kind of thing. It might be that you felt like you'd overcome a challenge and it was really a big deal, or you invented something and you were really excited about what you'd made. Like, people have different things that are sort of their top value things that make them feel good.
Mm-hmm.
It could be physical. It could be, you know, I'm sure you know about auditory and visual and kinesthetic learners. And that also goes with what lights us up. Often it goes hand in hand with what lights us up. So if you can grab onto that, and then you can make a point of, let's say you have a desk-bound job like I did for years. Kinesthetic person here who had to sit at a desk for 10, 12 hours a day sometimes. What do you do to make that day better for you? It could be as simple as getting up and going for a walk around the block on a regular schedule or doing a plank in the back of your desk, right? Like whatever it is that makes you feel like, oh, okay, now I got my blood moving and my body moving and I feel alive again. Or, you know, taking a moment to listen to music. Everybody has different things, but if you make those things happen in your day, and it's not, I don't believe in work-life balance. I think it's a complete sham. I think for a lot of people, they're not getting these things in any part of their day. That's why they're burned out. If you can't get it in at work, maybe you work in a job where you really can't do these kind of things. You're standing, you're a cashier standing behind the counter, or you're serving people as a nurse at a, you're walking the halls and you're doing the things you do, but you can still find aspects of it. What aspect lights you up of what are you doing? You know, is it when you smile at a patient and they smile back, it feels good, but you're in such a hurry. You haven't stopped long enough to smile.
Yeah. And it doesn't register with you that you just got a win. Right.
And how long did that take? It took like a second.
Yeah.
Literally like a second.
Yeah.
And yet it could make your day.
Yeah. Love that.
So those things, being aware of those things and then proactively making them happen.
Yeah. Love that.
In all of your life, not just at work, it will help you get back into that place where you feel alive again and you're getting the best of you out into the world.
Yep.
And then you're in a position where you can start thinking more clearly about what is it that I value? What do I love? And how do I make more of that for me? And when you do that, every bit of your time becomes more effective. That is the pure spending time.
Yeah, I love that. Love that. How can people connect with you, Michelle?
What I have people do is I have them text to me the word clarity to 33777.
33777.
Yes. And that will get them to a free community that I have online, which has tools in it. And the tools that they can get from that are, we didn't talk about the SWOT analysis, but that's there and they can learn about it. But I have a downloadable guided meditation and journaling prompts that help them get to that who am I and what lights me up moment in clarity.
Okay.
And that's really the best first step they can take.
Okay. Fantastic. Thanks so much for sharing your story and the work that you're doing in the world. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, of course. So everyone listening, please, if what we talked about today resonates with you and lands with you in a way, or if you know someone in your world who you think would benefit from hearing this conversation, please feel free to copy the link to our chat and send it to them as a guest or as a gift rather from me. Or you can connect with me on my site at www.theallisonk.com and just hit the connect button. It's in the upper right-hand corner. And just write to me and we will take care of it for you. Or you can reach out to me on any of my socials and say, hey, I really enjoyed this episode. I know somebody who needs to hear it. We will help you make that happen. This is how we've been able to build such an amazing audience across the globe and why we reach people every single week and why we're always ranked high in the search engines. And I just love hearing from all of you to know that what we're talking about here and what we're doing is making a difference for you. And that's exactly why I show up and keep talking to amazing people like Michelle every week. This is Allison Katzkowski with The Ultimate Journey of Self-Care. You're one step closer to living your ultimate life. So make it a good one.